sunshine, tears and rain, precious memories of years gone by. Eyes of darkness, fear and pain, all the time that we had. When all that's left is a photograph, not one golden moment in the sun.
Masochists, welcome back to The Worst Show on Earth, a podcast where my friends and I watch some of the crappiest television shows in history in an effort to discover which is the absolute worst. I'm Matt Murphy, and I've rounded up our usual suspects. We have Rachel, who's been indicted on 16 counts of reckless adorableness.
Oh!
We also have Alex, who made a remark so snarky it landed her in the clink for a nickel.
Yeah, I'd go again, see?
And finally, we have Tachi, the human IMDb. He stands accused of cheating on those CAPTCHA tests.
Guilty as charged.
And we have just watched the second episode of Cop Rock. Pew, pew. So for those of you who didn't tune in last time, once upon a time, there was an executive producer named Stephen Bochco. He's made one of the most lauded police procedurals of all time with Hill Street Blues, and fresh off the launch of his other highly successful shows, L.A. Law and Doogie Howser, M.D., he was clearly mad with power. He decided he wanted to make a musical show, and he turned to familiar territory by setting this new show within the LAPD, and with a little music provided by the Randy Newman, Cop Rock was born. We have episode two.
It was a difficult birth.
Now, how would you compare this to the pilot? Is it better? Is it worse? Somehow inscrutable?
Oh my God, so much better.
I'm not so certain about that.
Well,
here's the thing. Uh-huh. I think the pilot drove our standards for the show down so much lower that we weren't as shocked by how bad they were at making a musical.
Okay, but one of the things that we were mostly complaining about with the first episode was that musicals, like the musical numbers, should have something to do with the plot and make the story flow. It like tells the story. And I feel like this episode actually hit the only major complaint we had about the last episode.
It did that a couple times.
I would say 50-50.
The show still has the power to surprise us every time a song starts.
Yes.
It's because Cops sang in this episode.
Yeah, it was shocking. Cops actually rocked. Like, it delivered on the premise that the pilot somehow failed to do. Which, correct me if I'm wrong, the point of a pilot is to really hammer the premise home, right?
Yeah.
One would hope.
And, I mean, they got the rocks and they got the cop, but they didn't have the cop rock in the pilot. And here it was rectified within the first musical number, which was, by my account, a stunning sort of jazzy eulogy called You're Not Gone, which was the partner of the cop who was shot and killed.
Yeah, we got a recap at the start of the episode, in case you didn't listen to the last one. It's precinct. People sing sometimes, generally not about what's going on. There was, like, a cop, his partner was shot, they went and chased down the guy who killed him, and then the, like, rogue hotshot cop killed the guy in cold blood.
It's sort of Shakespearean.
Mm. Anyway, you can listen to our last episode if you want the full details.
I highly recommend it. So, that's the first scene in the new episode, is the eulogy and the funeral of this cop who has been shot on the job.
And it was a strikingly strong opening, because it like opened with with Chief, who, as we learn later, is a tremendous piece of shit.
We knew that, but the show went further.
So much further. And then we like cut over to the partner cop, who like music starts, and then like a dude just comes out of nowhere with a sax.
He starts playing Lethal Weapon saxophone background. It was amazing.
It was kind of amazing.
It was pretty amazing. The problem I had with the song, though, was it was sort of indecisive as to whether or not the rest of the people at the church were part of the song or not.
Yes.
Because sometimes they were all mmming, and other times they were just sitting there staring at him. Which actually brings me to another point I need to make about these songs. Maybe not this song. There are other worse offenders. My point is that the staging and presentation of the songs is so boring. More often than not, rather, there's no, like, snappy editing. There's no cutting around. There's, like, a small amount of playing with reality. And one of the songs does it really well. But most of them are just, like, the camera either slowly zooming in on or slowly zooming out on someone singing.
It's like the rule of improv, like... Even if you're just doing a talking scene, do something else.
Right.
Yeah. With the eulogy song, "You're Not Gone," it was very unclear whether or not they were perceiving it as a song, and if they were, and as Alex said, if they were part of the musical or if they were just observing this person having a moment of temporary insanity by bursting into song.
Well, musical grief.
It goes along with what I said in the last episode. I said that this is a team of writers who are used to doing serious procedural, now trying a musical. I think the same thing applies to the crew and the DP and that group of people. I think they're used to shooting police procedurals, and now they're doing a musical, and maybe they're not confident with that.
Yeah.
That makes some sense.
They could have been a lot fancier with their moves, that's for sure.
The opening song also illustrated a problem that the opening also kind of hammered home, which was for a lot of the scene and the song, we were sitting there going, who is that? Do we know them? We touched on it last episode that all white people in the show look alike.
Yes.
And it doesn't, like the opening of the show, the actual opening, the Randy Newman song, what's it called?
Under the Gun.
No, it's
Under the Gun.
it's just Randy Newman singing. We don't see any of the characters.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, but they're not in character. We don't get like a proper cop show gives us pictures of the cop with their name of the actor underneath and like a little bit of a moment establishing their personality.
This is just a bunch of people hanging out in a recording studio while the song is being... the very long song.
Yeah, bopping their heads. And...
Yeah.
Like, what are examples of, like, I want to say off the top of my head, I want to say Love Boat did this.
Yes. Gilligan's Island did this.
You have the character and the actor who plays them, and maybe
Small
you even...
Small Wonder did this.
Oh!
it's a trope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for a show that has easily a dozen characters... all of whom have their own, like, subplots, and it's serialized. The plots carry on through the episodes. So we're not reintroduced to these characters every episode. It's really difficult to jump into this show and piece together who people are.
So I believe I had just one final problem with our big opening funeral gospel song.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was well... The guy's good enough singer. It was emotional. Mm. It was big. It was a decent song, and it was remembering a character that we, the audience, saw for about a minute. It makes me wonder, what the hell are they going to do when a real main character dies?
Will a real main character die?
I don't know.
I somehow doubt it because of budgets and stuff.
I don't know about that. I think Hotshot Cop might be in danger, because the entire plot of the episode is about this, like, cop... Who killed the cop killer, and now he's under investigation by internal affairs.
Mm.
And really the whole framing device for the episode is the guy from internal affairs going character by character and interviewing them about those events.
I don't think he's from internal affairs. I think he's their chief at their...
Yeah, he's the priest.
Captain Hollander.
We can't call him Chief, because Chief is a different character. And he belongs in a different show, because he's a crazy person.
Well, we'll get to Chief in a minute.
Like, the after the opening, the show picks up with internal affairs, the captain, interrogating, like, the new kid who was kicked out of the house by hotshot cop.
LaRusso.
LaRusso's the hotshot cop.
Yeah.
New kid is Gaines.
Mm-hmm.
The name of this episode is... Ill-Gotten Gains.
Which I don't get, because it has nothing to do with...
Well, Frank is going to get him as a partner.
He got him as a partner through the ill-gottenness of his partner dying.
Okay, all right, I'll take it back.
And furthermore, there is a through line of people getting information that they maybe shouldn't have gotten because they use techniques that maybe are looked down on. But we'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah, so, like, a new kid is questioned by the captain, and the new kid's just, like, afraid that he's in trouble because he screwed up this bust. And the captain's clearly pressing him for, like, information about how LaRusso's a piece of shit. But new kid is, in fact, so green and so impossibly naive that he can't even seem to pick up that something went down here.
Nope, he totally believes LaRusso.
And took in his notes that LaRusso called him a moron and said he screwed up the bust.
Yeah.
And he also says, 'cause he did. All I ever wanted to be was a cop. Because it's good dialogue.
And then I believe he also questions the cop who is LaRusso's partner.
Donnie. Yeah.
Which establishes just how gritty a setting this is. Because in this world, even cops don't talk to cops. Because he's like, I won't say shit.
Donnie is covering for LaRusso.
Right, right. But that's a lot of the conversations he has boiled down to I won't say shit in this episode.
All right, are we at the mayor scene yet?
I think we can move to the
mayor scene. Let's get to the mayor scene. This is when this is when our brains turned inside out.
Because the mayor, who was wearing frumpy outfits last episode, is in full Dolores Umbridge plumage.
Oh, she's magnificent.
She's in this grotesque, like, purplish mauve checkered suit. Her hair is just like a perfect, it's like one giant bun on top of her head.
It is late 80s perfection.
Yeah.
It is if Cleopatra 2525 got sucked in a backwards time thing when she was an old woman and brought some clothing with her.
Don't cross the streams.
I'm sorry.
So she has a scene with the chief, who is this white-haired, he's like the chief of police, and as we established in the previous episode, he's like a weird cowboy gun nut who has a model cowboy in his closet that he shoots when he's angry.
Yep.
And we get more of that this episode, but... So, like...
I think that's a little bit healthy, though, you know, to take it out on a robot.
With real bullets?
Look.
In your office?
I mean...
Regardless, he ups the ante this episode, and it doesn't matter. Because he ends up shooting, a poster of the mayor with a shotgun.
This is after he says that women are, like, horses?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Women used to be like horses because you could saddle them up. They wouldn't complain. And when they got old, you could put a bullet in their head.
So basically, he's really mad that the mayor is female, so he has to answer to her. So he shoots a cardboard cutout of her.
But this is after the mayor is basically like, you're going to give me LaRusso because the public wants him. And because we as the audience think that's actually justified because he's scum and he broke the law. Which brings me to a question about the mayor. She's got this weird good mayor, bad mayor thing going on.
Yeah.
Like, because in the last episode, we know she's corrupt and takes, like, mob money. But also, she's, like, upholding the public interest. But we don't know if she's upholding the public interest because of justice or because of image.
It's totally image.
Yeah, it's image. She totally wants to be reelected.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're always concerned about, I think.
Yeah, whenever it's the chief and the whenever it's Chief Kendrick and the mayor, it does feel like we're visiting a different TV show.
We're visiting Twin Peaks.
We're visiting Twin Peaks,
but like a sexist Twin Peaks. But let's focus on the chief for a second because his line is absurd.
It's really over the top.
We paused, I think.
We did
after that to recover from what a ridiculously misogynistic statement it is.
How
genuinely absurd the entire scene around it is.
It was disturbing, I think, to our modern ears, because that kind of old-timey speak is just not tolerated in these parts no more.
More important, like, he talked about women as something you could put a bullet in their head when they got old. That's disturbing no matter what era you're in.
Didn't he say between the eyes?
Yep.
Yeah, that's just disturbing. That clearly... I always found those things disturbing and confusing. Maybe growing up differently gendered, you didn't have that. I don't know.
No, that's pretty screwed up.
That is
screwed up. That's gotta be screwed up.
Yeah, that's like threatening to shoot someone because they old is not cool.
Threatening to shoot your wife because they're old. Which was the implication there.
Yeah.
Anyway.
This is actor Ronnie Cox, who's known for playing villains, like in RoboCop and Total Recall. He's cast well here.
He is the most interesting character in the show.
Yes, but not in a good way.
No. But if he's a villain, kind of in a good way.
Yeah.
You're supposed to hate a villain.
But time will tell if what side of the law he ends up being on, I suppose.
Oh, Cop Rock.
Cop Rock.
We'll return in a moment.
We cut from there to this house, this really nice mansion, and we just sort of jump into this scene. There's no establishing shot or anything. Suddenly there's just...
No, there's an establishing shot.
Is there? Oh, it was like the highway, though.
No, it was of the house, overlooking the highway.
Yeah, we're like going into the house. We're at the front of the house. We go in.
There's a gardener.
There's
several cops.
We see an establishing shot of the maid on the floor, right, with her head bandaged, and then they put her in a gurney.
Oh, I must have been taking copious notes on the last scene.
Perhaps, yes.
Mm.
And it's the officers who are possibly in love with each other, but not married because she's married to somebody else.
Right. The forensics officer, no less.
Ralph.
Ralph, the forensics officer, is married to Vicky, the lady cop. And Lady Cop and her partner have this ongoing sexual tension that they explore in a fun, fabulous way in the next show-stopping number. This is what the good life feels like.
Where they dress up in all of the clothing of the rich people whose house was just robbed and dance around in their bedroom.
Yeah, so we get this quick scene of these two rich people. The house was robbed. The cops are there investigating it. The wife is flipping out. She leaves the room, and they burst into what is definitely the best musical number in the show thus far, right?
Yeah.
We weren't ready. This is the song that kicked in when no one was ready for a song.
Right.
Yeah, it just started, and we're like, oh, okay. But it was great, because it was what you want out of a musical. It was the song was interesting. It was building their relationship with each other randomly out of nowhere. But mostly it was just visually interesting. It was a fun scene to look at.
It did make sense in the plot. It did establish those characters as cops who didn't have a lot of money, who would never have the good life, and they really liked it. It was a fantasy.
It was a fantasy. I suppose I was just shocked by the total lack of lead into it.
It just started.
They didn't lead in kind of talking about the house and talking about the couple.
They did. They had a one sentence lead.
The one sentence
lead. That's not a lead in.
It is for a 42-minute show.
That's a lampshade.
I have a prediction as to how many people next to me will raise their hand. Who here has seen Mannequin? That's exactly what I predicted. Rachel and no one else. Yeah. Okay.
I used to love that movie.
Remember the clothes wearing montages?
Yes.
That's all I thought about during this scene.
They were great.
They were great.
In fact, that movie is great and we should watch it.
Oh, yes.
But yeah, this scene was awesome. This scene, I was like, wait, has this show found its way? And has it?
Here's the thing. It's improved moderately in quality, which might make it less of a train wreck, which works against it, I think.
The scene... What happened was...
That's for our purposes.
Yeah. Mm. What happened was this individual scene was entertaining. Not sure it fit with what else is going on, but we were entertained for a few minutes.
Fair enough. Anyway, after that scene, we get another internal affairs scene where Captain goes and talks to the... Ralph in forensics. And it's basically I know you lied on the report about LaRusso, and... Forensics Ralph is I'm sticking to my word. And the captain can't get him to break. And that scene's actually pretty bland and boring. But then we get Gaines and Rose, who are now the partners. We get a buddy cop thing going on in this. And this is the scene that made me realize what the theme of the episode was.
Police work is marriage?
Kinda. Gaines, who is the new kid, who's just trying to prove himself, and Rose, who's the guy who just lost his partner, end up getting paired up as partners. What an unlikely pair. And Rose is all, grumpy and has PTSD from his partner dying, and Gaines is socially inept and sings soul music. Motown?
Motown.
Motown. Singing a bunch of Motown, yeah.
Motown incessantly. In the car. He is so irritating.
But also, the turnaround on that. Like, if your partner is killed, I'm pretty sure a week later you're not going to be put back on the street.
I think it was at least 2 or 3 weeks, but it still didn't seem like enough time.
It seemed too quick.
Yeah.
Well, they're low on people. They need their force back out there. Think of all the criminals. The prisons are overflowing.
Prisons are overflowing.
Yes.
Now remember, in addition to the annoying cop medley, which is what I titled his collection of Motown hits, we are also treated to Rose not speaking for at least half the time. And we really feel his annoyance with Gaines.
Yeah, no, they did a really good job of projecting that into the audience, because I was phenomenally irritated with the scene. Because it is a massively annoying scene.
Yes.
Anyway, after this scene, we jump into a scene with a lineup, and here we're back to like the house investigation, and they've got the housekeeper there, and there's a lineup of basically like a boy band. Like a Hispanic boy band.
No.
You asked if it was Menudo.
Yeah, I thought maybe it was Menudo, but 10 years older.
Right. No, the guys in Menudo aged really well, and they were all really good looking and way buffer than these guys who were clearly a dance crew.
But didn't Menudo get like, didn't they keep cycling members out when they got too old?
They did-ish. Like, it didn't happen to, like, a bunch of them, I don't think. Or maybe it was like, these guys are too old now, and now we will put in new guys. But they were all much buffer and better looking than these guys.
This was an incredibly poorly mixed song. I had a real difficulty understanding what the lyrics were, though I did sort of catch some of them, which were like, we're the crew with the copper-toned skin. When something goes bad, you haul us in, or something like that.
It was a racist song. Like a song it was about racism.
A song about, yeah, about racist lineups.
And how each one of these guys had an excuse about, or an alibi about where they were for the crime. Thank you. That happened. Like, I was with my girlfriend. I was hanging out with my mom. Those sort of things.
And it's framed cool because, like, they, like, start as a lineup, and then the camera drops, and the window the cops are viewing the lineup through kind of becomes, like, a television screen.
Mm.
Like, we're looking into this, like, kind of cool space. And then it's a terrible rap. Like, I'm not wrong that it was a terrible rap. Right?
Yeah, some of them were rapping, some of them were singing.
It was a lineup of weird Latin thugs.
Yeah, with varying degrees of musical talent.
And scars.
Varying scars as well, yes.
As Murphy pointed out, the sound mixing got in the way of getting involved.
Oh, yeah. That's the whole show.
Oh, yeah.
The walla is overwhelming in most scenes. The sound mixing in the songs means you get one out of every, like, maybe, like, 75% of the words I get, and the others I'm just like, I assume they said something there.
Mm.
That's a shame for a song that is attempting to make a little bit of commentary.
Absolutely. Like, they definitely had something to say. But in the end, the housekeeper says that none of them did it. None of them are the ones. She doesn't finger any of them. And they're stopped. They're back at square one.
Sort of, because the female cop, Vicky?
Vicky. Vicky the lady cop.
Vicky the lady cop. Vicky.
Officer Quinn, cop woman.
Okay.
It is Vicky Quinn.
So, Vicky Quinn, cop woman, she was watching the woman look at the guys, and she saw that she was staring at the perpetrator of the robbery quite a bit, and was quite sure not only did she know the guy, but that she was in on the robbery.
'Cause a woman can tell.
Women's intuition, clearly. Or good cop work.
I'd like to think, but in this show, I think they're going with women's intuition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is this the part where they're playing pool after hours?
No, that's the next scene. Oh. That's the next scene. We get Lady Cop playing pool after hours. when the captain comes in and tries to get her to break her husband, who is forensics cop.
Ralph Forensics.
Ralph Forensics. Yes. And he basically goes in and decides to scare her by saying that her husband lied and he's going to go down and he'll be busted and he's going to jail and he's screwed. And she has the appropriate response of being like, fuck you, go talk to him, and storms out. That's pretty much the whole scene, right? Like, not a lot happens in that scene.
No, that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Then we get more unlikely police partners, Gaines and Rose.
Oh, boy.
This is the scene where they sing, actually. I was mistaken. The previous one must have cut off well before the singing started.
Yeah, the singing was much later.
And to be clear, this isn't a musical number. This is just the annoying us with Motown for 5 minutes. which it went on way too long.
Everything seems to go way too long.
Well, they've got to fill an hour.
So Gaines is singing Motown while
Rose is sitting there.
He's just sitting there for a long time. And they do a little gag where Gaines goes, stop! And Rose slams the brakes. And then Gaines goes, in the name of love. Is that funny, guys?
It made my eyes roll.
So moving on to the next scene, we get loose cannon cop LaRusso, who's been kind of absent from the episode thus far, interrogating the housekeeper in the house robbery. And she's got just to set the scene on her, she's got like a bandage on her head, she's got a black eye, she looks roughed up, and she's refusing to answer any more questions. She's sticking to her story. So LaRusso just creeps all over her.
In every conceivable way. He tells her hair smells nice. He, gets really close to her physically.
This was after the female cop tells her that they know that she was dating. Wasn't the female cop in the room with her?
They're trying to get her to turn on her boyfriend.
They are.
They think planned this robbery.
But LaRusso makes the female cop leave.
Yeah. He kicks everyone out but his partner.
Yes.
And that's when he starts creeping on the...
It was so gross.
Then he's like, you know what happens to ladies in prison? You gotta make love to the other ladies.
He threatens her with prison rape.
Yeah.
And he adds the word lesbiano.
Which I don't know if that's actual Espanol.
Who knows?
What I'm astonished by is that this episode, the chief had a scene where he talked about shooting old women in the head. Yet somehow this episode has a more misogynistic scene.
Yes, LaRusso is unhinged, and I think that's sort of the point. It's him versus the captain, and the captain's going to try to do his best to clean up his own department.
Here's the thing, though. In the previous episode, LaRusso seemed unhinged, but justified. Now he just seems like a monster.
Well, I think that may be what they're playing with. Like, maybe the show has some nuance in that regard. I might be able to give it that because it's presenting a flawed character and we maybe have to make our own judgment call on whether or not he's a decent fellow.
So far, he has not presented one iota of decent fellow. He has broken into a house without actually knocking first and saying that they're the police, right? That was the opening shot of the first show.
Yeah, true.
Fair.
He has, what else did he do? Oh, he
shot a dude.
He didn't show up to the arraignment for all of those people he had just put in the lockup.
Mm-hmm.
He then shows up to, oh no, then he shoots a guy, right?
Yep.
He kills the guy who ended up, he did kill the cop from before. Then he shows up to another arraignment with a fake arm sling.
Okay, so LaRusso is our serious villain.
Yeah,
and
he's not a good guy.
Chief Kendrick is our cartoon villain.
So one's our cop show villain and one's our musical villain.
Okay.
Yeah, but which is which?
Ooh.
Kendrick is the musical.
Yeah. Oh.
So
he's there, like a Dick Tracy character.
There is a redemption to this interrogation scene, which was once this scene ends, LaRusso's partner is like, when this investigation's over, I'm getting a divorce with you. Like, we're done as partners.
There we go again. Police work is marriage.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's definitely the theme. The theme of this episode was partners. You know, so difficult. Everyone's partnership is different.
Well, I think marriage is a big theme in this episode because the marriage between Ralph and Vicky, that is threatened with workplace encroaching on their actual relationship.
Oh, yeah. And like... And then Gaines and Rose literally, like... Put their hand on the Bible. The captain, like, swears them in as, like, a married partner. Mm-hmm. Cop couple.
Then you have, at the very end, and I'll skip ahead just for this part, we see Captain Hollander and his wife and their family unit.
With the crazy eyes wife.
Crazy eyes wife and problem child, am I right?
Yeah, totally.
But that's a number of scenes away. But we do see the captain next scene because he and LaRusso have a showdown.
That was pretty good, where LaRusso basically dares him to a game of chicken with him.
Which he kind of did last episode too, so it was a little redundant. But, you know, they're giving it to us again.
Mm-hmm.
It's consistency.
Then we flash over to the bedroom where Lady Cop and Ralph Forensics are like getting ready for bed. And she's like... The captain said you lied on your report. And he basically confesses to her that she did it. And this destroys her trust in him. Like, she can't believe that her husband, who would never lie, which I feel like should have been set up in advance, but, you know, I'll give it to them, would lie on this report. And she handles this by singing about it.
I called this Vicky the Lady Cop's Lament. And it was very boring and very long. It pairs very well with Ralph's lament from the pilot episode.
Oh, so they're a long, boring couple together.
Yeah. They're perfect for each other.
But she's so much more exciting with her partner. Now, the problem with this song is it just doesn't need to be a song. Like, we get everything in the scene. And then she sings about it.
And we stay with her while she sits on the bed the entire time and sings.
Oh, God. We don't change camera angles.
No, there's one fade. Yeah. But
the curtain blows in the background because this is an 80s music video.
This was the worst offender of boring cinematography song.
Mm.
Yeah.
Nothing happens. She doesn't pull out a photo of him and look at it. They don't, like, take this opportunity to flash back to their first meeting or anything like that.
She sings about the photo of her parents at their wedding.
Well, we could see a photo. Just give us two people. Like, do something. Show us.
It's funny because I was noticing that behind her was just a photo of her, which I thought was a weird photo to have.
Yeah, I thought my parents didn't keep photos of themselves on their own bedsides. That's not something my parents did.
I could understand a wedding photo or something.
Sure.
This was just her head.
Yep.
Next to the bed.
Then we move to a new kid scene where he is impossibly naive. And to like set the scene, Gaines and Rose are in like, where are they?
They're in Compton.
Yeah, they're in Compton. And Gaines, new kid, sees like a car that left its lights on. And his bright idea is to get out of the car.
Bright idea, lights.
And break into this other car to turn off the light.
So that the guy's lights don't eat the battery.
Like, don't knock on the door or anything. Just break into his car right off the bat. Because he's, you know, he's just so good intentioned. And so they set off the car alarm, and the guy comes running out and yelling at them, at which point Rose just basically goes crazy on him and, like, takes
the nightstick.
It's the thing to open, to unlock the door.
It's that, like, slim piece of metal.
Slim Jim.
A Slim Jim.
I think it's called a Slim Jim, yeah.
It's that piece of metal that, like, a technician will use to, like, pop your car lock. And he, like, smashes the car's window and smashes the mirror. And he's, like, yelling at the guy. And it's a decent PTSD scene.
Definitely.
That's what we're supposed to be getting. His partner died and he's falling apart.
But Gaines handles the situation.
Like, really well.
He calms the man down and he takes out a paper and pen. He says, I'm not writing you a ticket. I'm writing my name and contact so you can send me an estimate. An estimate for what? For the paint scratch. Not the broken window.
Well, I think that was implied.
I think the window was definitely implied.
Yeah. I would have brought that up, though, because Gaines says, you know, for the paint scratch, I just wanted a line of, like, and also the mirror, right? Just...
here's the thing about this scene, because I think this scene is supposed to drive home that, like, Gaines is...
He wanted to be a cop to help people.
He wanted to be a cop to help people, and he's, like, being helpful, and he's, like, good with people. But, like, for me at least, he comes off kind of, like, weirdly sociopathic. Because he doesn't seem to ever be sad for any reason. And, like, his idea of breaking into a car.
He was the guy crying at the funeral in the beginning, who you were like, who is that guy?
That was him! I did not put it together. All the white people.
I was trying to tell you that during the episode. I'm like, he was the one crying in the funeral.
So the next scene we got is LaRusso, loose cannon cop, has gone to a lawyer, and it's a quick scene, but loved it, because he goes to this lawyer who's basically like, yeah, I'll take your case, and he makes an upstaged reference. He's like, judges don't like to be upstaged by me, and I'm like, haha, it's a musical, upstaged.
I really hope that means he has a fucking, like, upstaging music piece. Man's style serenade. In a future episode, but I don't know if we'll ever get to that.
Yes, this is when we started having dreams of the possibilities. I think we're all hoping for the last few episodes to be the trial of LaRusso.
I hope so.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for. Though it's moving so fast, that might be like the halfway through the season peak.
Well, middle of the season is you got your case-building episodes. And then you got three trial episodes, all building up to surprise witness Randy Newman.
Your Honor, I got something to say.
But the lawyer basically wants...
I was in the room that day.
I'm sorry, you were saying words.
The lawyer... The lawyer... doesn't want, like, a lot of money. He just wants 50%... of all, like, TV profits from a LaRusso's story, if it's ever turned to, like, a book or a movie or something.
In perpetuity throughout the known universe.
Oh, shit, that's right.
So he's like, who knows what his plans are. I hope that pays off and isn't just, like, a random one-off. I hope, like, because that would be a weird tangent for this show to go on.
That was, like, an L.A. thing, though.
Oh, for sure. When that happened, I was like, yeah, I've been in L.A. for a while. That's not that weird to me. Mm-hmm. That a lawyer might say that.
And then we get to the captain's house scene.
Yes.
Someone want to approach that one?
Well,
it was a scene.
Yeah.
I mean, I would like to credit Matt Murphy for predicting...
exactly how he's going to sound.
Exactly how Hollander will sound when he sings.
That was amazing. The captain.
Yeah, Captain Hollander.
Because he has a talking voice very much like Bruce Springsteen sings. So I just pictured him sounding like this, and he was singing a song about Wendy.
And then I said, and when Murphy made that voice, I said, now hold on, give him a chance. And then he did exactly that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. No, Murphy, thank you.
We establish in the scene that he's got like a housewife, and they're struggling to make ends meet.
And she wants to go to art school, but she's seen the checkbook, and they just can't afford it.
Yeah, it's show isn't kind to women.
Neither were we. We kept commenting on her eyeballs.
Yeah, no, she's crazy looking.
She had a very pronounced skull. I want to say, like, I could see her skull. Behind
that's
her
easy.
Eyes.
It's pronounced skull.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to pick apart her looks too much, but there was a quality to her and how she acted that made you think she's like the nice-looking neighbor who poisons your cats.
Poor God. Yeah.
I think it was all in the eyes. Her eyes were acting, like, she was acting really hard.
It really did throw off the rest of the scene, because the rest of the scene was kind of, like, heartwarming, but her performance was... slightly unhinged.
And the song was a duet.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right.
Called Dang. It's... I think the song... I'm assuming it's called It's Gonna Be Alright.
Yeah.
That's what the chorus was. It was kind of a sweet song, except for her crazy eyes.
And does anything else happen in that scene? We learn that they're, like, pinching pennies. She wants to go to art school. She's crazy.
Well, when their song ends, there was a very politely timed doorbell.
Right, right. And that's how this is how the episode ends. Because Forensics Ralph arrives. Ralph Forensics?
Ralph,
I've got to get his name right. And tells the captain that, you know, there is, like, he admits that there is something fishy about LaRusso's story about how the cop killer was killed. And
sort it was of point, the angle.
Yeah, like yeah. The angle at which the guy would have been grabbing the gun just doesn't add up to how he died. And the captain's like, yeah, like he's pointed the captain in the right direction. But then he goes a step further to be like, bitch, if you ever use my wife to get to me again, I will cut you.
It was the correct response.
It was.
To someone threatening their wife.
Threatening them through their wife.
Yeah.
Well, threatening their wife too, yeah.
Yeah, no, it was awful. It was a cruel, terrible thing to do.
But was it right in the service of justice?
I feel like the point of this show is, like, that's the question this show asks throughout the whole show.
Mm.
Cops doing dubious things for good reasons.
Well, when we describe the show, it sounds really smart.
Here's the thing. I don't want to fault this show too much, because the writer-director of this show did produce some pretty good cop shows. And I feel like coming off Cleopatra, we might be being a little too hard on this show.
Oh, Cleopatra, we forgot to mention that in the fantasy scene between the two possibly romantically related cops, partners, Cleopatra, the 1950s movie with starring
Taylor.
Elizabeth Taylor, was on the screen.
Ooh, in
the
television. Synchronicity.
It's a nice little throwback, yeah.
This has all been part of our elaborate plan, you see.
What's the next show? The next show will have singing.
The next show, they'll be
singing Cleopatra.
Anyway, my point is, this show might actually be too good for us. Like, it's a terrible musical. We can get that right out there. It was baffling, inexplicable, and for many of the periods of this episode, kind of boring. But, like, I do think this episode had genuine themes it was exploring, and it was exploring them well.
Yeah, I agree.
The themes of marriage and partnership were here, and they were addressed because every partnership was very different.
Right.
And like, they all mirrored marriages going on. Like, that was clearly the arc of the episode. And, like, two of the songs didn't suck.
Two out of...
Five.
Right. That's still less than 50% not sucking.
Yeah, six if we include the opening.
Which
just sucks.
It sucks, yeah. It would be two out of six.
I noticed this time that Ralph Forensics is wearing a shirt with raccoons on it.
Oh, I didn't notice it.
I was looking at his head.
Yeah, his giant forehead. Almost called him Forehead Forensics for a while, but that would have been mean.
Let's not get mean, crazy eye wife.
So what would everyone's favorite song of the night have been then?
Oh, the bedroom scene.
Dress up bedroom.
Oh, yeah, the fantasy mannequin. Those clothes were so 80s.
Yes.
It was the only song in this show that actually felt like we were watching a musical.
Yeah.
So far.
Yeah.
It was fun. It was, they had fun cuts and, like, it was just fun.
It was all there. They sang a fun song. They did it in costumes. It kind of broke reality a bit. In an entertaining way. It built their relationship with each other.
I think we could also understand what they were saying.
That's true.
Which we couldn't for two other songs.
Like, the other songs had qualities of a good musical song, but they did not, the gestalt wasn't there. They never came together to be a good song.
Yeah. Well, I think that's all the cops that are fit to rock for today. if you guys listening out there like this podcast, please do share it with a friend and leave us a rating on your podcasting platform of choice. And if you want to hear more of us riffing, Alex, Tachi, and myself are on twitch.tv/scabbyrooster most Sundays as the Demi Dozen. It's an RPG show where we play a game called Scion Second Edition. In a world where the gods are real and all the myths are true, modern men and women weave new legends. And until next time, Enjoy your media no matter how crappy.
Big screen, color TV, remote control to turn it on.
A VCR, one for you and me.
They got a water fountain in the John.
It's a long way from the thin blue line up to this pleasure dome.
Come on in, sit right down, make yourself at home.
This is what the good life looks like. How do people get so much? What the big time feels like. Take a look, but don't touch.